So I would like to welcome Anastasia Chamberlain from the University of Warwick. Lovely. We're back on to women. Welcome. Thank you.
Thank you very much for being so patient, and I'm very sorry that you have to go through another few minutes of presentation, so I'll try to be short. So we're back to women, and I actually found Rachel and Carly's presentation really, really kind of interesting to me because it connects with many of the things I discussed. But I should apologize in advance because I'm not a geographer and I'm not very good with images, so this is the only image I have. So it's all text from now on, so please bear with me. The study that I based this paper on is taken from my doctoral research, which is seems like it is the memory, but it kind of draws on similar conceptual and theoretical things, and that's why I return to it, wanting to kind of understand a little bit more the concept of lived experience in prison, and I wanted to kind of conceptually and theoretically understand what is it that we mean, especially prison researchers, when we're talking about lived experience in prison. So this study, this doctoral project, looked at the experience of women's imprisonment and it focused in particular in articulating the experience of imprisonment into what effects punishment has on women. And I express what the effects of punishment are through an analysis of embodied experiences in prison. So I worked with a group of women. And with them, we devised together kind of an articulation of how they perceive their own self-identities, their gender, and other kinds of identities, and their overall backgrounds through their bodies. So I became really interested in understanding also the pains of imprisonment through this embodied lens. So in this paper, I kind of return to all these themes. I return to ideas of coping and survival in prison through the body. I return to ideas about well-being in prison. Actually, this is quite a current theme now, given the ongoing prison crisis that we're witnessing more regularly than previously through the media. And I return to all these themes because I want to rethink how I might conceptualize subjectivity and its relationship to punishment. So to do this, I use these 24 case studies, biographical interviews with former women prisoners. And in these interviews, I spoke to women about their lives overall. So I tried to kind of map and position their prison experience within their overall life narratives. And I looked specifically at the relationship between the body and punishment. And I also kind of want to, I asked questions around how women perceive themselves as well as their own lived world in prison as well as outside through their bodies, what position their body really takes in articulating how they perceive the world and themselves. So to do this, I draw on feminist research, feminist criminological research, as well as feminist theory more broadly. There's been a lot of kind of ongoing research in recent years, arguably within feminist criminological tradition, suggesting that we need to have a feminist critique of punishment, that we need a gender-aware understanding of how punishment relates to outside of prison notions of social control and discipline, but also how it has something more specific to women, and how it does this in a very gendered sense within a patriarchal world. However, some of my other kind of theoretical influences go to a more phenomenological feminism. And I'm a big fan of someone called Simone de Beauvoir, who wrote a very long time ago, and she had absolutely nothing to say about prison, but she wrote a fantastic book, I think, asking a very kind of basic but very complex question, which was, what is a woman? So I look at the second sex, that's the name of the book, and I want to understand how gendered subjectivity is conceptualized through this lens of lived experience and the particularity and the uniqueness of women's lived experiences. So I also kind of draw many of my influences from a friend of Simone de Beauvoir, Simone de Beauvoir, who came up with this concept of embodiment in the way that's been conceptualized more recently. Basically, his argument is that the world as we see it, as we perceive it, as we live it and feel it, is something that emerges through our bodies, through bodily perception. And this is not only something that matters about how we understand the world, but it also kind of shapes how we understand ourselves, our self-perceptions. So I take this notion of embodiment as kind of my basis in understanding subjectivity in the present context. Now, throughout the day today, I think many colleagues, and there were some amazing presentations today, spoke about this relationship between space and time. And that's been something that I became interested in, especially because my interviews were with former prisoners. So these were women who were talking to me about what prison was like, but they were also connecting their experiences of the prison to what happened to them before prison, but also what happened to them after prison. So this is kind of the dynamic and the relationship between the time that had passed since their prison experience, but as well as their memory of the space of the prison took a slightly different shape than traditionally. What I found really interesting and kind of a comment that I perhaps thought might fit with the context of this conference was that many of the women I spoke to who talked to me about this, their prison experience and their experience of punishment being very permeable, in the sense that it wasn't just what happened to them inside the prison that was painful or punitive or negative in different senses, but it was also how that experience was connected to what happened to them after prison, and also how all these different moments in their life narratives connected together in general. So these women described to me how they were very prison-specific punishments that they experienced, so very prison-specific pains that they experienced, but they also spoke about the intrusion of outside forces and then kind of the transference of outside forces within the prison space. And they spoke about the pressure to look a certain way physically, the pressure to consume in certain ways, and to have the material and financial means to pursue certain consumptions in prison. And they spoke about basically the kind of the economic and neoliberal aspects of a prison that I didn't expect to hear about, because I was expecting them to speak specifically about the space of the prison as primarily just punitive. So the first theme that emerges in this study for me, and I think this is something that someone else mentioned earlier, is that the prisoner body, we're focusing on how prisoners actually physically, materially experience punishment. The prisoner body undergoes significant transformations in prison. This is especially the case for women, I think. They undergo transformations because of the lives that many of these women had before prison. Many of them were experiencing chronic illnesses, drug addictions, and various other kind of health problems that are really taking shape the moment they enter the prison. This is the first quote referring literally to the relationship between how time passes and how doing time are interrelated in creating a lived experience of aging in custody. So this woman here is talking about getting old before her time. Other prisoners spoke to me about their bodies changing by looking more specifically, by expressing whether these changes in their bodies were positive or negative. Especially the women who were undergoing various detoxification programs in custody, and so would have not been taking drugs for some time, those women spoke quite dominantly about the idea of gaining weight, about their size, their morphology changing while they were in custody. And at the beginning of their sentence, these women saw these experiences as a success marker, as an indication of progress, of rehabilitation, if you like. However, as these women, the same participants, progressed closer to the end of their sentence, they told me that their feelings and their perceptions about those same bodies that had grown and been sized changed. They changed because they were preparing for release, they changed because outside pressures were more imminent, and so these women started feeling very anxious about who they would be on the outside, but also they started having some very practical kind of anxieties in terms of how they might dress and how these issues of performance and physical presentation in prison kind of limited women in their interactions. As I said before, I also looked at this idea of how women survive punishment and coped with everyday life in prison through their bodies. And a kind of a key case study that I focused on was that of self-injury. I'm sure you're familiar with the kind of shocking statistics that we hear about in recent months about what's happening in both men and women's prisons in relation to self-injury and suicide. But most of the women I spoke to explained to me that they had self-injury both in prison but also after prison, and this is perhaps something that we don't often talk about, and some of them also explained that this is a habit they developed, you know, before entering prison. The women who explained their self-injury as something that started in prison talked about it as an expression of wanting to regain a sense of self-control, of wanting to gain a sense of authorship. I think Rachel used that word earlier, a sense of authorship over their own bodies. So they actually explained it as an, as to some extent, a form of self-expression. There were other kind of more, perhaps less depressing instances of resistance within prison, and these also focused on the body. So there were particular spaces within the prison that the women described to me as uniquely positive in comparison to the rest of the prison spaces. So for instance, they spoke about canteen day or the hair salon as very unique spaces of some form of personal expression and liberation. This is a quote from a participant who had to, for practical reasons, change her perception of her own self-presentation in terms of how she did her hair. And she kind of goes through this process of letting go of certain outside gendered pressures on her identity and through this kind of resisting. Now, when the women came out of prison, and this I think relates to the dilemma that some of the earlier presenters had, many of them spoke to me about life in prison was to some extent described to me as somewhat easier than I had anticipated, especially when it was compared to what happens after prison. And to me that was a problem, that was something I struggled to kind of manage because I also had my own critical dilemmas to deal with about my position in prison as an institution. But what became really apparent for me was that if I used this concept of embodiment to explain punishment and look at the relationship between punishment and the body, it was clear that punishment troubles outside of the prison is actually something that persists after the end of the prison sentence as well. This was especially clear when women spoke about stigma, as well as about the various concealment strategies being engaged in order to hide, for example, marks on their bodies from scars or injections, or when they spoke to me about having to change consciously the choice of clothes so that they can look less dangerous, more feminine, and less criminal. So they expressed that stigma was something that they really had to deal with as a perpetuation of their punishment. And I think Moran also talks about this in an earlier paper. So just to conclude then, because I'm running out of time, what I want to argue in this kind of way, this more conceptual way of rethinking subjectivity in prison through embodiment is that to some extent, I think we have articulated the relationship between prisoners and punishment as kind of one-dimensional, as something that has punishment, something that's happened on the prisoner. And to some extent, we have understood the prisoner as the object of punishment. And I'm interested in seeing this dialectic between seeing the object of punishment as well as the subject of punishment on the prisoner and the ex-prisoner. So this is what I kind of try and shape in this discussion. to take it a bit further, then I suggest that if we focus on the body and conceptually look at this idea of embodiment more seriously, we might see how punishment is something that troubles, and it's not necessarily confined in the physical walls of the prison or within the particular domain of a prison sentence or in terms of time. I think I'll leave it here.
Where did you carry out this research?
Sorry. Yes. Something that struck me, I found it really interesting and useful. There was one in the notes, the one about the woman talking about how she started self-harm in prison. I'm not quite sure where this is going. I'm interested in your thoughts, I guess. But I thought it was very interesting that she was asked about, do you self-harm? And she said no, so she was given a razor. So there's something in how the women are being approached that's very static. So you don't self-harm, so you can have this. But actually how the women were talking about their experiences really, like you say, emphasise the kind of mobility of punishment, practices of punishment sort of within and beyond the prison. And I wondered if you thought more about how the women are positioned by the prison environment and by the staff, I guess, and what that.
Well, I guess that's a very good point, actually. I hadn't thought of it in that sense, but yeah, I think this particular participant is really capturing that distinction that is often made in the prison system of who's a dangerous prisoner, who's a vulnerable prisoner, and who's not. Mm-hmm. Who should we kind of invest more time or security on, who is okay. So I think, yeah, she's really, like you said, it presents this idea of a prisoner as someone who is this very static, unchanging individual from the moment she enters to the moment she leaves. There's this one person. And arguably, I mean, there is an ongoing process of transformation probably outside of prison, perhaps to all of us, but probably it's even more acute in a prison setting. So yeah, this fluidity of subjectivity is perhaps why things like this happen, and a lot of the time they're not. It's impossible to control them.
This question? I also have done research with women after prison too, and one of the things that they talk about is how their bodies became public property in prison, particularly women who've been pregnant in prison. I'm thinking one of mine who the officer couldn't take the handcuffs off for her scan, and she felt that was a real invasion. I wondered if you'd had any kind of comments about the public nature of their bodies.
They spoke to me about feeling So when they spoke about stigma, they very much spoke about feeling publicly kind of ashamed, and in a way that held them to some extent as ex-prisoners, their punishment was no longer invisible. They were actually really physically in their minds seen as others, as some people who had particular experiences of imprisonment or criminal lifestyle, etc. In terms of public property, I think one woman spoke to me about this in relation to aging, to feeling growing older in prison. And I think there is another study that actually refers to that very specifically. And she described this basically by saying that she, especially in relation to reproductive kind of experience, she literally felt that her body was taken away, that it was lost, and the opportunities that come with that more youthful body were also taken away. Yeah. But that was just one participant I spoke with.
I always infer that if you build a better prison, you reduce these.
No, I think that's exactly the opposite of what I would argue, actually.
Okay.
Because if we take this idea of embodiment seriously enough, then we can see that punishment is something that is very personal, particularly embodiedly felt, right? So I think it's not about making prison particularly more effective.
say more reformed, it's actually about understanding seriously the impact of that experience in your own life. Any more for Anastasia?
I was curious about, so I really like how you sort of position the gendered expectations that are coming from the outside and sort of permeating the prison. And I was curious if you had also noticed that same thing, that they talked about the same thing happening with racial expectations, especially in terms of, you know, these ideas about appearance, but also in relation to how they express their coping.
Yeah. It did come up, I have to say, I spoke to predominantly white women, which was, I think, one of the biggest limitations of my study.
Mm-hmm.
But it did come up, actually, many of the women who did come from an ethnic minority background, actually, I think one of the women who talks about resistance came from an ethnic minority background. And she and others spoke about that kind of pressure, both as gendered, as well as classed, actually,
mm-hmm.
and racialized. So, for example, I think most of the women I spoke with talked about dress in prison as a very kind of anxious process for them, because they didn't only have to have their clothes in order to survive and to kind of manage everyday life, but they had to have particular clothes. And they attached very specific symbolic meanings to those clothes. And if they didn't have those clothes, many of them actually talked to me about feeling bullied or excluded, or one of them talked to me about feeling that it denoted that she came from a particular part of the country, what she was wearing, or that she didn't have enough money. So it was all, it was a very intersectional process. And that's part of the reason I want to look at this idea of subjectivity from the point of embodiment.
Mm-hmm.
I want to kind of look at gender, but also see how many other kind of categories intersect with gender in that sense.
Lovely. Thank you very much, Anastasia. Do you have any questions? We've got a few moments that we didn't get a chance to ask. And I'm just going to go back. So,
I just wanted to ask Rachel and Carly, it was going back to that question right at the end of the discussion about kind of the danger of lamenting the closure of Holloway. I just wondered whether going back to the document that was written by the Radical Alternatives to Prison, which was alternative to Holloway, which was a counter discourse developed at the time that Holloway was rebuilt, is actually a useful tool to use that. The agenda which the alternative to Holloway at the building point back in history did as a way of kind of critiquing the closure as you know, just as a tool.
I was just going to say that, you know, there was a few, like, even one of the articles that kind of put up that thinking about closure of Holloway as, you know, a prison revolution in a different sense, that we should be thinking about, you know, the particular experiences of women, the particular profiles of women in prison as a kind of entry into abolitionist processes, and thinking about, you know, why do we need spaces and what kind of, you know, kind of getting involved with the reclaiming Holloway advocacy movement as well, like thinking about how that site could be better used for women in the area, so thinking about domestic violence and services, thinking about women's shelters, thinking about affordable housing and safe spaces and that sense. So yeah, definitely, I'll have a look at that question. I'm going to tell you actually, so thinking about alternatives now.
Yeah, I think it's, I mean, Reclaim Holloway, it's either Reclaim Holloway or Holloway because the stories that have that document on their website. And so, yeah, I think we've a lot of the kind of campaigning actually.
I've got part of it if you want the whole one.
So, yeah, definitely there is, in thinking about what happens to this space now, or trying to kind of make some interventions, what happens to that space, I think those are the discussions.
Any more?
Listen, that must be a short 15.